Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. It's great to have you with us. Now, Bahrainis are still protesting. It's 2 years and 2 months since they started their revolution, and it's still an ongoing process. Now, in the absence of mainstream media coverage, Bahrainis are doing their best to use any opportunity which is available to their benefit to send their message to the outside world. And Formula One Grand Prix seems to be an excellent opportunity to do so. Welcome back now to discuss the latest developments in the Persian Gulf Kingdom in Bahrain. We're delighted to be joined by one top guest. Hopefully later we'll also be joined by another guest of ours over the phone from London. But for the moment, we're delighted to be joined by a highly scholar and analyst. Dr. Mahmoud Karimi, it's a great pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. That's my pleasure to be here.
Thanks very much for coming over. Now, let me just tell you that Dr. Mahmoud Karimi is actually head of the Office for International Relations at Imam Sadegh University. He's also a top scholar and analyst, particularly when it comes to the issues of the world of Islam and countries in the region. We'd also hopefully shortly be joined by another guest of ours, as I said, over the phone from London, who is a Bahrain activist. Time for a short break, but after the break, we'll be talking about Bahrain. We'll be talking about the Formula One Grand Prix and whether Bahrainis can use this opportunity to send their message to the outside world in the absence of mainstream media coverage. It's great to have you with us.
And 2 months ago, in February 2011, with the advent of the wave of Islamic awakening and Arab uprisings, Bahrainis took to the streets to demand constitutional reform, equal rights, and eventually the overthrow of the ruling monarchy in the Persian Gulf island. Over 2 years on, as the protests go on and in the absence of mainstream media coverage, Bahrainis continue to seize upon any chance to express their rightful demands. And Bahrain Grand Prix on the Formula One calendar seems to be a quite appropriate chance to do so. This time round, 2,000 of Bahrainis have demonstrated near the capital Manama as a part of a series of protests planned by the political opposition ahead of next week's Formula One Grand Prix. Saying no to bloody Formula One, the crowds marched waving Bahraini flags and chanting anti-monarchy slogans on Friday. Outraged protesters chanted slogans such as "The people want the fall of the regime" and "Down with Hamad," referring to Bahrain's King Hamad bin Isa al-Khalifa. Bahraini regime forces, for their part, fired tear gas and sound bombs to disperse demonstrators. According to witnesses, clashes broke out as regime forces attempted to disperse the gathering. The protesters also responded with Molotov cocktails. According to Human Rights Watch, the Al-Khalifa regime has arrested 20 opposition activists ahead of the event. The human rights body announced Bahraini authorities had carried out home raids and arbitrarily detained opposition protesters in advance of the Formula One Grand Prix weekend. Back in 2012, the Grand Prix went ahead as planned in the Persian Gulf Kingdom despite protests. But it's fair to say that back then the people of Bahrain were the real winners of the race. It seems the champions of Formula One 2013 in Bahrain will be no different.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us now. I was just told that now we have the pleasure of being joined also by Mr. Qasim Al-Hashimi, a top Bahrain activist over the phone from London. Mr. Al-Hashimi, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me with you on your program.
Pleasure. Now, let me just tell you that Mr. Qasim Al-Hashimi is a well-established Bahrain activist. He's also head of a Bahrain international mission. Now, Dr. Karimi, if you agree, we start with you. We know that, you know, Formula One, this is not the first Formula One, of course, in Bahrain. We know that that was also the case last year, but the new Formula One is approaching. It seems that Bahrainis are seizing any opportunity that they find to send their message to the outside world, particularly when not much attention is given to them by the media.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'd like to say Salamun alaikum to all viewers. And then answering to your question, I should say that, in fact, Formula One is a great event. You know that more than 600 million people would watch this event.
600 million?
Yes, throughout the world, right, as the statistics say. Mm. So it is a great event. And then, therefore, it would be also, in fact, we can say in one sense, a good opportunity for Bahraini government to use it, in fact, in favor of the government and in favor of the political system that they have. And on the other hand, it would be somehow, you know, an opportunity for the government to conceal the real dictatorship there and, you know, to make people understand and to pretend that there is somehow a calm situation, there is no problem, so everything that they decide to hold, every ceremony, is easily held. And but anyhow, the people in Bahrain, well, I mean the majority of people, are opposing it because they have started demonstrations since last Friday, and they have promised to continue up to next Friday when the Formula One is held.
You know, they're saying that they're not going to stop the race, but they actually want to use that to convey their message.
Yes, to convey the message. You know, yes, they say, in fact, that among their slogans are democracy is our right, prisoners should be released. And this is, in fact, the message that they want to convey because they do not have, you know, the problem is with the media, is with the regional media and international media. That those media are not conveying the message of people, and they are not, in fact, communicating the message and the message of the nation in Bahrain. Therefore, even, you know, the Bahraini government is preventing human rights activists to enter Bahrain and somehow provide report, prepare reports there. Therefore, the regional and international, I mean, media are either silent in case of the Bahrain events, or they are supporting the government.
Right.
And it is because usually these media are somehow dependent, either dependent on the regional powers or dependent on the Zionist and the Western powers, and they would not reflect and they would not give the true image of what is happening there.
Right.
So, or we can say that there is even double standards, you know. When it comes to Syria, they would cover everything in Syria and every kind of the things that terrorists there are doing. But when it comes to Bahrain, and it's turn for Bahrain, they would not broadcast it, and they would not convey this message. Or sometimes they say that, okay, this is an ethnic or religious conflict in Bahrain. And
another thing that they say, Dr. Karimi, is that, you know, in the case of Syria, the number of casualties is so huge, but in Bahrain, it's just about hundreds of people. So that's saying that, okay, it doesn't deserve that much attention. That's what
The problem is that we should compare the casualties to the population, okay? When you compare the casualties to the population, you see the population of Bahrain is also so small.
So the proportion.
Yes, we should see the proportion, not just the casualties.
Great.
Yeah, because you know Bahrain is the smallest country in the region, is the smallest Arab country in the region, and therefore, so if we see the proportion, then we cannot give right, and we cannot say that they are right in that coverage.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's go to London, where we're joined by Mr. Qasim Al-Hashimi. Mr. Al-Hashimi, I hope you can hear me.
I can. Thank you very much.
I'd just like to talk a little bit more about the Formula One championships. And, you know, Damon Hill actually used to be a champion, former F1 champion himself. And we know that he's made a number of interesting comments. He's actually one of the few people who questioned the motives of the race and also the wisdom of the race. So also last year, he mentioned a number of points and he said that the wisdom of the race is basically a matter of question. But you know, the thing is that others didn't bother. It's only Damon Hill.
Well, yes, you are right. I mean, I think we've also, instead of there are, as far as you said, the bishop, everyone has been silent. Right. I think we've covered it on the other side. I mean, if you listen, if you've been following the media around the world, mm-hmm. I mean, even today morning, the South Africa, South Africa radio has been talking for quite long, for half a day. Mm-hmm. Most African, European, Americans, Asian, most of those countries, media in those countries, radio, newspaper, TVs, we're talking about the Formula One in Bahrain and mainly talking about what is going on, you know, about the human rights abuses, about the struggling of the people, struggling to democracy, about the demand of the people, the threatening going on in Bahrain for the Formula. So, I mean, Bahrain being a center, right. the case of Bahrain has been really a center in the international media. Not even a single newspaper in UK has not written about Bahrain every day. I mean, from day before yesterday until now, and it will run on. People are demonstrating outside opposite to the organizer of the Formula One nearly every day. So it's like a big publishing. It's like a very big, really media. Active and demonstrating activities all around the globe. So I think, yes, you are right. There is no one like Mr. Damon Hill last year when he announced. Mm-hmm. But I think we've covered it at the other side by all the media has been talking about it this year.
Great. Thanks very much indeed. Now, we know that Dr. Karimi, according to analysts, last year's Bahrain race was a public relations disaster. So we basically had lots of people who were there. They didn't want to be there. And in spite of all, you know, negative media attention last year, the race still took place. So it seems that F1 is not learning from their mistake last year. And it seems that they decided to actually go on with the race anyway. What do you think motivates those behind, you know, the race to go ahead despite last year's catastrophic mm-hmm. Public relations experience?
Yes, as you said, in fact, we've had just few people like Damon has who had in fact a message of sympathy mm-hmm. with Bahraini people, and even he said that if we hold that race in Bahrain, it is like holding a sport event in South Africa at the time of apartheid. Mm. So it means that he has said, or he has expressed, in fact, his sympathy with Bahraini people. But we, unfortunately, we should say that majority of those people are not thinking so. And so it has two sides. Mm. So one is the Bahraini government. So because the Bahraini government, in fact, is benefiting from this situation, you know, it would give a kind of legitimacy to the government. So the regional and international mm-hmm. legitimacy that, okay, it is everything is okay in Bahrain and they can hold this kind of event. And also, on the other side, we can say that it is also a matter of business, you know.
Right.
So it's a matter of business for the Bahraini government because mm. they can make money there, and also a matter of business for those who are participating and for the organizers and for the participators and the drivers. So everybody who is involved, in fact, in some way here.
Right.
So it is, I can say that maybe one of the motives is the business motive,
Great.
If I'm right. And another point is that, you know, sometimes because we do not have a satisfactory and adequate information about the situation, then we cannot evaluate and we cannot assess the situation very good. Maybe those who participate there and those who organize there are also under the influence of the media, and the media are not reflecting the real situation of Bahraini people there.
Right.
So either they are silent and they think that, okay, there is no problem in Bahrain, or they say that, okay, this is there is some tribal, some ethnic problems there, but so it cannot be a big obstacle before holding this
Great.
Formula One, yes.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, let's go to London, where we're joined by Mr. Al-Hashim. Mr. Al-Hashim, you know, it's been 2 years and 2 months. And, you know, first we had a number of rightful demands, such as equal opportunities, such as constitutional reform. But to be honest with you, nothing has drastically changed. And there's no sign that the nephew and uncle are ready to leave. So how do you assess the success of the Bahraini people so far?
Well, let me first not agree with exactly what you say now. It's not the question of they don't seem to be ready to go.
Right.
It's the main question is how to sell the idea. You see, we've got like a national dialogue. I think you've heard about the national dialogue going on. You see, there is no dialogue. There is no nothing going on. So you're saying,
right,
that man will go, that man will remain. There is a pre-cooked thing. There is a pre-prepared previous thing. The problem is how to sell that idea to the public, how to market it. It's not they are going or they are not. In fact, in the inside the pre-cooked plan, they are not inside the bar, but the majority of Bahrain people whom they are demanding the total change in Bahrain, means the getting rid of the monarchy itself and becoming a republic, they will not accept to buy a such plan. So the people whom they made this plan, I mean the American and the European, British, and Al-Khalifa and Al-Saud, they cannot market what the plan they have for Bahrain. And this is the main problem. Don't the main problem is the uncle or the nephew, because those are stones and they can be changed. But who is going to accept? I mean, if they change the uncle and they change the nephew, will the Bahrain, if they know that the Bahrain people will accept that and that some things will settle, they would have announced it long time ago. The main problem is they cannot sell it. They cannot market it. So then that's why they are struggling in giving an excuse, a daily excuse about the national dialogue of having some time. They're talking about who is the representative of the king, who is the representative of the government, and how many hours we have to spend every week, and all those stupid things. The main question is not dialogue, because there is no dialogue at all. I don't believe there is a dialogue. There is a pre-cooked plan, but the problem for all the parties, including the monarchy, is they cannot sell it to the public.
But, you know, when you look at the website of the National Dialogue of Bahrain, Mr. Al-Hashim, you see that there are some happy faces. We have the speaker of the basically the National Dialogue Council, his happy face, saying that they've reached a number of consensus.
I mean, I hope they can tell us what kind of where did they reach really. Up to this moment, they have spent 13 meetings among that dialogue. And up to this, after 13, that's been almost now 3 months they've been spending, and still they are not agreed to how many hours they have to spend every week. If this, how many hours, or who is representative, the king, who is representing the thing, will take 3 months, and we've got 2,000 points we need to discuss, that means we need at least 25 years to finish that dialogue.
25 years,
I'm telling you, there's no dialogue. This is just a propaganda, just a big film, are not they are unable to sell it. That
right.
is only the reason. Otherwise, let them show, let them say it. What, mm. where they reach, what do they reach, what is it? Let them explain it. I mean, you will find nothing. Even those people whom they are joining and they are discussing, the member of this dialogue, they themselves come on the TVs every day in the media and they
right.
say, we've reached nowhere.
So if it takes 25 years, probably it's the longest dialogue in history then. Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we were talking about some other aspects of the current situation in Bahrain, particularly about the national dialogue. So please do stay with Centre Stage. Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the national dialogue. And Dr. Karimi, we know that February was the beginning of yet another national dialogue. We know that there was another series in July 2011. Mm-hmm. And I think today they're having a meeting on Wednesday.
Yes.
Today, I don't know about the outcome of today's meeting, probably it's still ongoing. But how much progress do you think has been made in those sessions? I mean, Mr. Al-Hashimi was saying that probably if they want to cover all the points, it takes 25 years.
Yes. I think also that this kind of dialogue may be just mere propaganda. And maybe the evidence is that now about 3 years, this dialogue is just somehow from time to time is going on, but we do not see any success. You know, when there is no success, then we should not hope, and in fact, it would not be promising. This is one point. And, you know, if we want a dialogue to be successful, first, we should remove the obstacles, and secondly, we should pave the way for, in fact, and we should initiate some of the things that can pave the way for the success of that dialogue. So we know that there are real obstacles now. And the Bahraini government has not sought and has not tried any, in fact, to remove any obstacles here. For example, you know, the abuse of human rights, violation of human rights, violation of their women's rights, violation of the rights of children.
But they had the Bastioni report, and then they said that, okay, there have been some violations.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a positive step, wasn't it?
But anyhow, you know, what you actually see in Bahrain, you see that even nowadays, children, for example, yesterday or the day before yesterday, a 16-year-old boy was arrested. So it means that they are continuing these things. Or even the rights of prisoners, in fact, you know,
right.
the violation of rights of prisoners. This is, they are not ready. The government is not ready to recognize the basic rights, the basic freedoms of people. This is also another obstacle. And, you know, we know that majority of people in Bahrain do not have any right and do not have any opportunity to have a role and to have any share in the government and in the ruling party. And only the minority, in fact, the Sunni minority is ruling there. So this is also an obstacle because, so if we are pro-democracy, it means that we should give the due role to the majority.
Right.
So what is the weight of majority in Bahrain? And to what extent they are recognizing the share and the weight of that majority?
Dr. Karimi, a number of analysts are basically portraying the current situation in Bahrain as a sectarian violence. What's your reading into this? Do you think it's really a sectarian problem?
You know, when we are talking, firstly, not only the Shia majority there, but even there are human rights activists and they are also Sunni people who are supporting this movement,
right.
and they are in fact against dictatorship, they are against the monarchy, and at least they are satisfied with the constitutional monarchy, not the monarchy that is in fact ruling there. So it is not just sectarian, you know. And the second point is that when there is majority, We are, if you give the right to the majority, then so sometimes majority is Sunni, sometimes majority is Shiite, sometimes majority is Christian. Right. Then here we cannot say that this is sectarian. Mm. No, this is the right of the majority.
Right.
So you should give the right to the majority. Then we can say that one of the aims of government, one of the aims of Bahraini government in these dialogues is to divide the people, is to divide the protesters and those who are opposing the government. Because so some of them can come to welcome the dialogue and some others would not welcome the dialogue. So this is the goal of the government, to divide and in fact to, you know, to create a kind of tension between these groups.
But we have some opposition groups attending. I mean, last time around we had Al-Wefaq saying that they originally didn't want to attend. They said they attended, then they quit. This time around we had also some members of the opposition. Mm-hmm. They're also a part of the national dialogue.
Yes, they are. I say that so sometimes they go to understand to what extent they are serious, the government is serious. And so some even are somehow, you know, hope that it would lead to success.
Right.
But the actual thing, as I said, so if something is promising, if you have, for example, some sense of success after 3 years, after 2 years, after 4 years, then
right.
you understand and you say that, okay, there is a room for success. Mm. This is one, in fact, removing obstacles. And in right. case of paving the way, in fact, and initiating some new things and some new solutions, we can say if the government is serious in these dialogues, so it should take steps in releasing the prisoners, the political prisoners, those who are arrested because of the, you know, freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, many people, especially doctors and teachers and others, have lost their jobs. So the government should, you know, restore, in fact, the situation, and they should return to their jobs. Mm-hmm. Some of the mosques are destroyed, and there have been no measure, no action to, in fact, reconstruct them.
Right.
Then we have also, sometimes they have attacked the ritual ceremonies and religious ceremonies of people, and even some students,
right.
some students are prevented to go to the school or are prevented to take exams. Mm. So this is something that, in fact, government first, if they are really serious, so they should first do these things and accomplish this goal, and after that, then so people would be ready for dialogue. Otherwise, this dialogue would not be a right and a legitimate dialogue.
Great, thank you very much indeed.
Now,
Mr. Al-Hashimi. Dr. Karimi was talking about releasing of, you know, Bahraini opposition figures. And I'd like to particularly refer to Abdul Hadi Al-Khawaja, who is a very famous Bahraini activist, unfortunately still in prison. What have we got on his situation? What's the update on his situation?
If you give me a minute only, first of all, I will add to Mr. Karimi, a colleague of mine in school, in Al Hidayah school, and one of the people whom his nationality has revoked. That's as me as well. I am at the same list. I have been also, my nationality has been revoked. Mm. But I will just, you know, add a little. It's a question of. You ask him whether it is a sectarian, or I would say yes, it is, and it's also even more a sectarian. It is. I mean, tell me who is affected from the other part. I respect the other part, the Sunni other part. They are brothers, they are sisters, they are citizenship same like us. But this is also a genocide. This is a real genocide from Bahrain, my friend. We are only 600,000 people of Shia. We've lost more than 200 lives. Only from February 2011 until now, we've got thousands are running away from the world, hiding and sleeping in the graveyard. We've got thousands in jail. We've got thousands have been deported or they've run away from the island. What do you call that? Everybody is scared. and fear, so right. they are thinking of leaving the island. Well, this is internationally called a genocide. Genocide out of sectarian, because the Al Khalifa regime is practicing the sectarian. That the result is a genocide. That's the right. I want to say. But Abdel Hadi Al Khawaja, we okay. are scared of what is Abdel Hadi Al Khawaja now is really facing, and inside, and his daughter as well. Bless the other leaders, the political leaders in jail, in prison. But we do not have an update, a real update. I mean, my last information about Mr. Al Khawaja was almost 5 or 6 days ago. But I am not sure, really, whether also we got the correct news about him or not. Those our leaders and our friends and those whom they are struggling for their beliefs are kept in a hiding place. I believe maybe Mr. Karimi knows better about Al Khawaja than myself.
Right. Mr. Al Hashemi, you actually said in one of your interviews, I think it was early 2013, that I just want to quote what was said. Bahrainis will resort to new tactics against Al Khalifa monarchy in 2013. What do you exactly mean by new tactics?
At the present, we have been using the demonstrating in Bahrain. We have been using the activities outside Bahrain, in particular countries and cities. But the new tactic, really, that we are pushing now for other influenced countries in the globe to interfere in Bahrain. It is not Bahrain, and the Gulf is not a territory belonging to United States and UK doing what they like in it. We have the right to invite other international community and countries to get involved to solve this problem before it is upside down. I think Bahrain, even though it is a small country, it's like...
So I think...
Czechoslovakia and the other, and Bosnia, and even though they are very small, but they were the reason after a worldwide war. And I think Bahrain, even though it is that much small, I think Bahrain will lead to an international war, a war that will result in a big lose, and I can feel that. And that is the strategy that we are trying to avoid, but I know we cannot avoid, and we are trying to accommodate with it.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now, Dr. Karimi, this last question, I think, is a very key question. Who do you think will really win, the F1 race? Bahraini government, the protesters, or the F1 itself?
I think, and I'm sure, that in fact the truth would win. Mm-hmm. So the party that is right, so it would win, you know. This is the law of God and the divine law, that always truth would win. Because, you know, at the beginning, when Bahraini people demonstrated, they were just demanding some reforms.
Right.
They said that, okay, we want democratic reforms. Mm. And even they were satisfied with constitutional monarchy. But what was the response of the government there? The response was just violence, was dictatorship, was atrocity, injustice, and arresting people. You know, even the Saudis also came to help these people in somehow making pressure on these people. This was the reaction of the government. But
Dr. Karimi, the uncle of the king, he's actually a world record holder. I mean, we're talking about Formula One. I think he's been the prime minister for over 40 years. So it's very difficult to let go.
Yes.
After 40 years.
But, you know, I think because when people of Bahrain, so whether Shia or Sunni, are watching what is happening around them, you know, in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Yemen, and they see that, okay, all of the previous one and the former rulers have gone. And what was the real reason behind their going? So they, I think, they also would think about it, and they would decide to be more serious about the, you know, the, in fact, overthrow of this government. And I think that day by day, day after day, the real nature of the Bahraini rulers would be clear to the people, and therefore the not only the public opinion in Bahrain, but the public opinion in the region and also in the international level would be somehow satisfied that, okay, the Bahraini government is not a legitimate one to stay and to be there.
Great. Thank you very much, indeed. Thank you. Now, we just have 1 minute, Mr. Al-Hashimi, for that last question. What's your prognosis of the future of Bahrain? Are you optimistic that even they also imply the new tactics that you just mentioned, the Bahraini protesters, Bahraini people will succeed in their demands?
I can see the victory. I can touch it. That's what, in a few words, I can say. I think Bahrain is now boiling those days. In regards to the very soon future, very near future, I can really see the people celebrating their victory in Bahrain very soon.
Great. So do you share the optimism of Dr. Karimi, optimism of our other guest, Mr. Al-Hashimi, about the future? But it's taken too long already.
That optimism, but I say that finally they would win, whether it's soon or late. I don't know. In fact, I cannot say predict that it would be very soon. But anyhow, they would win, inshallah.
Great. Thank you very much, indeed. To both of our guests. There is one point that I wanted to mention. I mean, last time round when we had the Academy Formula One Grand Prix, we saw that, lots of those who attended, they were not happy with attending. And now we're saying that they're coming, a number of them. And it's just a part of the Formula One. We know that it's in different countries. So probably it was not necessary to have, the race in Bahrain, because it was just only a part of it. It could very easily be replaced, but we, as you said, we're saying that they did not bother to actually remove Bahrain from the list. Probably this is because of the lack of media attention, probably because of other reasons. But we hope that, as you and Mr. Al-Hashimi said, the truth will win, and it's a matter of winning because we're talking about Formula One. Anyway, I'd like to thank again our two top guests. We had Mr. Ghassim Al-Hashimi, a well-established Bahrain activist and head of Bahrain International Mission. And we also had Dr. Mahmoud Karimi, head of the Office for International Relations at Imam Sadegh, Academic and International Relations at Imam Sadegh University. Thanks very much to both of you for talking to us and, of course, for those insights. So until next week, from a guest, from me and all the team here in Tehran at Central Stage, we'd like to wish you a very nice week ahead. And thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much. Thanks. Thank you. Great to have you with us. Thank you.